Ready or wrong?
All right. I gave out some source sheets through Ari. I don't know if everyone got copies. Okay, he emailed them around. Okay, fine. So we're going to talk about permission to steal. Or is taking without permission ever permissible? So that's a big sugya. It is mentioned in Simon Shin Nun Tes, and it has all kinds of repercussions and ripple effects and ramifications all over. So I'll tell you, Maisev, the Hava B'Didi, and that was when I was working as a lawyer at the law firm of Cleary Gottlieb Steen & Hamilton. And there was one Sunday afternoon that I came into work because I had to finish up some marking up of documents for a major transaction that we were doing. And when you mark up documents as an associate, it's very important that everything be written very neatly, all the changes that are being made, the cross-outs, the corrections. This is in the days where we used to do it by hand. I guess nowadays everything is by computer. We used to do it by hand way back when. And I needed to underline all of the comments that I was making and also all of the words that I was correcting. And I needed a ruler to use just so that I could I could write the sentences neatly and underline things properly. But I didn't have a ruler. And I couldn't find a ruler anywhere on my desk or anywhere in the normal supply rooms or in the normal locations. And nobody was around. Even though lawyers work very hard and very long hours, but Sunday is traditionally the day that people take off. There are plenty of people in the office on Shabbos. This was a firm that had lots of non-Jews as well. But Sunday was a very quiet day. This was a Sunday in the middle of the spring, and people had family outings or whatever other occasions, and I was pretty much the only person in the office whom I could find. And I was very frantic because I had to get the work done, and I desperately needed a ruler, but I couldn't find one. And then eventually I saw on one of the secretarial desks there was something resembling a ruler. It was a nail file that was used by one of the secretaries, but it would do because you could write, you could use the nail file as something equivalent to a ruler to make straight lines on top of the nail file. I was very much in a tizzy, and I was very desperate. And I thought to myself, it's only a little nail file, and I'll return it afterwards. I'll be a shol shalom midas. Ooh, it's already dangerous territory. But probably rationalized to myself that this is all for the cause of the firm, and surely the secretary would want her nail file to be utilized for this purpose. And I used the nail file. And then after I was done using the nail file and marking up the documents for a few hours, and I was ready to leave, I actually had a board. I had an engagement party to go to that afternoon. So I wanted to get to the board on time. So I returned the nail file. But much to my horror, when I looked at the nail file, it had ink marks all over it. I thought, I've completely ruined this person's nail file. And I felt devastated and terrible about it. So I wrote a long note that I left on the secretarial station explaining who I was, that I'm an associate at the firm, and I really apologize for taking the nail file. I explained the circumstances, and of course I would be willing to reimburse for any damage, that this nail file can no longer be used anymore because I have ink marks all over it, and I left for the day. And then the next day, the secretary in question got in touch with me first thing in the morning, and she was laughing. She thought it was the funniest thing. I shouldn't worry that, of course, I could take her nail files anytime. The nail files are trivial objects, and certainly for the cause of the firm, she's happy to lend out the nail files, and it's not so terrible that I got ink marks all over it. And bear in mind that when you're a young associate in your 20s, you can get away with a lot more than when you get older in life. But she was extremely understanding about it, and always well and forgiven. As just sort of a footnote to the entire story, since I happened, it made an impression on me. I remembered that day because when I went to the vort, I went to the engagement party later in the day. The couple didn't end up staying married, but nonetheless, they did get married, but they didn't stay married. I remember that part. But there were a lot of people at the engagement party. It's the first time that I met my wife to be. So these were the events that transpired on that day.
Whoa.
Yes.
Now, this was a good thing to know.
So, so the question is, the whole question, Shol Shlo Midas might have a little bit more room for leniency in certain circumstances, as we will see, but it raises the whole question, when can you assume that you can take objects without permission? Is there ever a time in which you can say that it's a safe assumption that the owner would not be makbid, would not mind if you took the object and therefore wouldn't be gazela? Do we draw a distinction between appropriating the object permanently for your usage, like you're going to take somebody's match and the match will never be able to be used again, or somebody's toothpick that once it goes into your mouth it will never be able to be used again, or something that you're going to borrow temporarily, like in this case the nail file? Is there a distinction between those two different cases? And are there distinctions in terms of whether it's something that everybody gives out, or whether you think that this particular person would be not makbid about? So all of these different distinctions are discussed in the poskim, as well as the question as to whether there's somehow a chiluk between the notion of it being mutter to take something because maybe a person isn't makbid, but at the same time, as the Pesach Teshuva writes in Simen Shin and Tes, quoting the Nodeh B'Yehuda, at the same time, it might not be shalcha, it might not be yours. It could be that under certain circumstances, there isn't an issur gezeila, but nonetheless, it's not considered to be yourself. It's not considered to be belong to you. So the first point of discussion, or the first reference point for this discussion, is the Gemara in Bava Metzia and Daf Chof Beis Amud Aleph. So the Gemara there tells a story about a Memar, Marzutra, and Ravashi. They went to visit the orchard, the Bustanum, Amari Bar Isak. And the sharecropper, Amari Bar Isak, brought some peiros and put the peiros in front of them. So Amem and Ravashi were very happy to eat the peiros, and Mazutra was not comfortable eating the peiros. And then afterwards, the Gemara is in Bava Metzia Daf Chof Beis Amud Aleph. It's in the sheets, the first source in the sheets. And then when the Amari Bar Isak came home, and he saw that the peiros were put out by his sharecropper, he said, "Why didn't you give them even nicer fruit?" He indicated that he was perfectly happy that the fruit was put out for his guests, and he would have preferred that even nicer foods were put out. So Maimon and Ravashi said to Marzutra, "You see that you had no reason to hesitate about eating the fruit, that the owner of the paradise, the owner of the orchard, is perfectly comfortable with the fact that his fruit were being used for this purpose, so there was no reason for you to be hesitant in any way." And he quoted the Brisa, it talks about somebody's being mafish truma for somebody else. It's a question, the halacha, whether it's only somebody who was appointed as a shliach, even if he wasn't appointed as a shliach, and the person took from some of the crops of the individual to whom the crops belong in order to take truma, and then the owner comes along and says, "Oh, why didn't you take from even better crops to serve as the truma?" And if it turns out that he's not just kidding around, or not just making a macha, because there really were better crops that were available, so we see that he really means it when he points out that there were better crops, so then the truma is considered to be good. So we see that the fact that there's a giloy das after the fact can even help retroactively. So Marzutra responded, that only works when you're dealing with a mitzvah item like truma. So something which is known as nichusa de mitzvah. Nichusa de mitzvah can be something which is even revealed after the fact. However, in this particular case where there's no mitzvah component of halachim mishum sifusu d'amahachi, you have to be worried that maybe the only reason why Mari Bar Isak was saying that it was all okay was because he would be embarrassed otherwise. He doesn't want to embarrass the sharecropper. He doesn't want us to be embarrassed because some of us ate the fruit. But it's not because he really is comfortable giving away the fruit. So the question is, what do you do with this Gemara? So Tosfos says that this Gemara has absolutely nothing to do with the notion of taking somebody's objects. You might say a Maimon and Ravashi thought it was okay to take somebody's objects if after the fact it would be nigla, it would be revealed that the person didn't mind because they're so confident that the person wouldn't mind. They know for sure that the owner wouldn't object. So Tosfos says that you can't draw that conclusion from this Gemara. This Gemara was only really a machlokis about whether a sharecropper could be trusted before the crops have been split between what belongs to the owner and the share that's going to be taken by the sharecropper. It's only there's a machlokis. The machlokis was whether in the event that the crops had not already been split, which was in this case, whether the sharecropper could be trusted to take some of the fruit that would be for his own purposes and make it clear that this was on his own account and not on the account of the owner, that this would not be subtracted from the account of the owner, but would be subtracted from his own account. So Marzutra felt that he couldn't be trusted, and Amem Ravashi felt that he could be trusted. But that was the entire dispute that was going on over here. And says Tosfos, the Ein Lama, Shayasomek Shisratze Mari Barisa Kishiyeda. You can't say that Amem and Ravashi were relying upon the fact that Mari Barisa would have been comfortable with the fact that the food from his own portion were given out without his permission to halacha kabaye, because we have a machlokas between Abaye and a Rava, whether yesh lo midas have a yesh or not. We paskin like Abaye, yesh lo midas lo have a yesh, that a retroactive indication that a person would have given up hope on an object had he known that he had lost it, even before he knew that he was lost, that he had lost it, is not considered to be a sufficient relinquishment of ownership for somebody else to derive a hana from the Aveda, for somebody else to take the Aveda, because the halakha is like Abaye, and just like the halakha is like Abaye, with respect to Shiur Yush Lomidas, that the finder can't keep the object before Yush has actually occurred, even though the owner is going to eventually be Miyayish when he figures out that he loses the object. So it's the same idea that even if somebody knows that an individual they're taking the object from that individual, that the individual is going to be perfectly happy, even ecstatic, that the object was taken from him when he finds out that the object was removed from his possession, since the owner doesn't know right now that the object is being taken from his possession, and we paskin like Abaye, so of course, the Memer of Ashi Mazutra, they all were paskin like Abaye, that wouldn't be good enough. So therefore, Tosfos says that in the event that you see an object, like a nail file, and you know that an individual is not going to be makpid, that you're taking their nail file or their other object, and nonetheless, even though they're not going to be mocking when they find out, since they don't know right now, they don't have the ability to provide you with this object right now, or to know that you're taking this object right now, and that they would approve of it. Therefore, that would be considered gazela. That would be considered to be theft. That would be considered to be prohibited for somebody to do that. So that's the opinion of Tosfos. And that opinion of Tosfos is also echoed by the Hagos Ashri, and it's also echoed by the Shita Samordechai. Now, the Shita Mikubetzis quotes the Rashba with a different interpretation of this Gemara, which might potentially give somebody permission to take trivial items, but based on a totally different Svara. The Shita Mikubetzis says, why is it that Rameva and Ravashi had a comfort level with taking this object? They certainly would not have paskined like Rav against Abaye when the halakha is like Abaye, so why didn't they take this object? It doesn't learn like Tosfos. He says, no, even if it's clear that this is before the chalukah took place and the Aris had no share in the peros, it doesn't, and even if he was completely not taking from the share that would eventually go into his account, nonetheless, this would be perfectly okay. Why would this be perfectly okay? So he says, because it's common knowledge, it's umdandas, it's known by everybody that the balapardes, that the person who owns the orchard, Mari Bar Isak, would not care that these fruit were taken. So Mazutra is abstained anyway, maybe as a midas chasidus. However, meikar adin, it would be perfectly permissible as long as there's an umdandas, that it's common knowledge, what we would call either common knowledge or established custom, that nobody cares if the payers are going to be used for these purposes, then even if explicit permission was not obtained from the owner of the orchard, that would not be a problem of gezeila. And he brings a proof from a Tosefta in Baba Basra, in Baba Kama. The Tosefta in Baba Kama says, for example, that if you have a child who's leading in his parents' house, and somebody comes along, like the son of a friend of his comes along, and he wants to give some of the food of the house to a friend who's visiting in the house, so then it's perfectly permissible for a child who lives in the house, even though he doesn't own the food in the pantry of the house, he's allowed to take the food from the pantry of the house to give to a son or a servant of a friend of his, v'eino choshesh mishum gezeilo, and you don't have to worry about the gezeilo shebal habayis. Why is that? Shekein nagu, because that's the minhag, and for the same reason, even though a wife has no rights to the possessions of her husband, if a wife gives a little bit of money from her husband's possessions that's stucco for a poor person who comes to the door, or for somebody collecting for charity who comes to the door, that would also be perfectly acceptable, even though it's not her money, and even though her husband is not around for her to ask her husband, because shekei nagu, because that's the minimum.
Wasn't there something even more of a chiddush in Tochus Gneva by food in the Pesach Shuvah? Come to somebody's house, you can take because it's
so that's what we're going to discuss. So we're discussing what are the sources for this idea. What are the sources? So this is the Rashba is the source quoted in the Shita Mikubetzis and Ekimar. Then whenever you have a Shekein Nagu situation, it's not, and Tosfos doesn't necessarily disagree with that, but Tosos didn't think that the case in the Gemara could be explained as dealing with that type of situation. But the Rashba is more comfortable saying that you can even understand the case in the Gemara as talking about a situation where it wasn't a question that in this particular case there was an assessment that the owner of the orchard wouldn't mind when he would find out, but that this was the type of situation where nobody would mind, that it's common knowledge, where it's accepted practice, that nobody minds in these types of situations. And the Ritva, the old versions of the Ritva, so the Ritva compares this to like Zuto Shoyam, that you have certain things which are kind of for public consumption, like you, a person has objects that are washed away by the sea. It's kind of an interesting comparison, but just like with the Gemara over there, in Bar-Metzi and Dafka Beis derives that is considered to be mutter for somebody else to take because of the fact that it is avuda mimeno, avuda ulechol adam. It's just out in the public domain already, or it's gone from the domain of the person who used to own it. So to a person's possessions, certain types of possessions of a person, or a person's possessions in certain circumstances are cast away from the owner in the sense that they are automatically, by virtue of common custom and convention, they're made available to the public domain. So in this type of circumstance as well, so it was felt that by a Maimon Rabashi, that it's common custom that when there are visitors who come to an orchard, and there are Tamidei Chachamim, says the Ritva, so it's common custom that the fruits are made available for all Tamidei Chachamim. It doesn't even have to be for all groups of people. It doesn't seem to be exactly a perfect parallel to Zuto Shoyam, which is Avuda, you know, from everybody. But this is, even if it's just available, he says, L'Tamidei Chachamim, he says, that the Meida Yadi the Mina Avinicha the Mina Chavir Nichale Lamari Barisak She Yohanet Tamidei Chachamim Minachasa Velo Asar Bisur the Yadi, because it was common knowledge that Mari Barisak would have wanted Tamidei Chachamim to partake of the fruit of his orchard. Yes.
So what's the relationship between what the Shem Tukubata cites as Rabisha Umgun Dasu Shein Bala Paris Matid and the second rationale of Kafnagu? Kafnagu sounds closer to Zuto Shoyam, right? It's like everyone takes paper clips from their employer, right? So by definition, it's something that's already in the public domain.
Right, so you could say that it's the that there are two different categories that are being established over here. One is that there's established custom. Kaf Nagu is established custom. This is the custom that's followed by everybody. Umdindas could be just common knowledge that this person doesn't mind, that this person is perfectly comfortable giving out their possessions, giving out all of their fruits to guests or Tamidei Chachamim who come along. So those are two different categories that appear to be encompassed within this this category.
Even if an employer has a paid but not getting the paper clips, if it's Kach Nagu,
so Mistama Kach Nagu is what we would call, it's a chazakah, like any chazakah. So if the chazakah is in any way counteracted by our knowledge that this particular person is makbid, so then it wouldn't be applicable. Yeah, however, if you don't know otherwise, and you can't, even the Zuto Shoyam seems to be used kind of loosely in this particular, most of the poskim say that it's very difficult to strictly apply Zuto Shoyam. Zuto Shoyam, the person could be screaming and yelling afterwards, I want it, it's still, you know, so... Pesachim Choshen and others say that it can't be that Zuto Shoyam is meant in the strict sense, you know, in this particular context. So if you look in the Shulchan Aruch and Siman Shin and Tes, the Shulchan Aruch paskins this way, essentially like the Rashba and like the Ritva, that whenever there is sort of a common practice or established a common knowledge or established custom that a person is not makbid about something, that's perfectly okay. Again, this is not addressing the case that Tosus is addressing, namely where there isn't common practice or established knowledge. It's just that in one particular scenario, the person who's taking figures that in the event that the owner would really know, they would be okay with it, even though it hasn't been established yet. So that is not paskin in the Shulchan Aruch according to any particular shita. We just don't find one way or another in the Shulchan Aruch. So Shulchan Aruch says, also digzo l'ashak apidu koshu, me'isome me'ovik l'chamim, v'him udavel sh'leikaman z'kapit be'ishari, But if it is something where nobody is makbid about, then we know that the common, that the established custom is that people are not makbid about it, so then it's going to be perfectly okay. So what are the examples of that? Like to take from a bundle or from a fence, you take a little toothpick, you take a little wood chip away in order to cleanse one's teeth, so then that's going to be okay. That particular case is mentioned explicitly in the Yerushalmi and Demai, in Perek Gimel, Halacha Base of Demai. There's a discussion in the Gemara about various Rabbanim who were out in the field, and they were going to take various, they were going to take little chips toothpicks from a field, which they figured nobody would be makbid about. But then in the end, they refrained from doing it. It seems like as a midas chasidus. That's why the Shulchan Aruch says, "Va'afseh osi b'yusham midas chasidus." Even that is prohibited in the Yerushalmi as a midas chasidus. So what types of things? So first of all, why would there be a midas chasidus against doing it if the owner is not makbid? So what's the midas chasidus? So you could say that maybe we're worried that this person is going to be the one individual who doesn't follow the chazaka, right? So you have to be always a little bit circumspect that perhaps you can't rely upon that 100%. But that's not the reason that's given. The reason that's right, because either the chazaka is a good chazaka or it's not. So we're assuming that it is a good chazaka. So the Sma says, you look in the Yerushalmi, the Yerushalmi seems to say, uses a lashon called bar nash u bar nash ti yavikein, that every single individual is going to take another chip away from a hedge or away from a stack of wood or a bundle of twigs that a person has set aside in their field. Soon there won't be any twigs anymore, and then the owner is going to be left completely bereft and completely without any of his possessions at all. So that's what the Sma says. He quotes the Nemuke Yosef as giving that reason. Dilosa ken kolechad, if everybody would do it, nimtza chavila kala v'gedr neros. Here, chavila kala v'gedr neros is not being used poetically. Being used actually, that the if there's a bundle, the entire bundle is going to be depleted. But again, if there's a fence and somebody's taking little wood chips away from the fence, and the entire fence is going to get destroyed because everyone's going to take a wood chip. So Chazon Ish, in his commentary to Demai, says he doesn't really think that you have to really be worried that every single person is going to keep on taking, even when it's clear that the supply is going to vanish altogether. The reason why he says there would be a midas chasidus, he says, "Mikol makom vay lipos b'nei mishum shadav magil lezazo begezo v'yeshlocha she'enem hugonim." That it's got a problem with midos. That if a person just becomes a little bit too lackadaisical about taking possessions from somebody else, even when there's a chazaka that the owner would not be makbid, it's going to lead to a zilzul of gezel. It's going to lead to less of an appreciation, less of a seriousness towards the prohibition against stealing. And also, you have to be worried, even though most people are not going to overdo it and take when, like you take matches from a matchbox, that you're not going to, you know, take all the matches from the matchbox. You have to be worried that there might be other individuals who will not understand what the etiquette and the protocol is, that you're supposed to stop at a certain point. And therefore, in order to protect the olam against the enam mehuganim, it's like, well, why we tell everybody to sign the prenuptial agreement? Not because you're going to need it yourself necessarily, but you have to, you know, set an example for those people who really will need it. So to Ovia, it's important to set an example for those people who really do need to have an example set for them that would not understand what the boundaries and what the limits are for this type of thing. So what would fall into the category of these types of objects? So this would be, so the post can talk about this. The Aruch HaShulchan says the matches fall into this category. He says you go over to somebody's house and there's an urn of hot water. It says to avail yourself of some of the hot water falls into this category. He says, at least in where he lived, that was the type of thing that people were not mocked about. It was understood. You go to someone's home, you avail yourself of the hot water, you make yourself a cup of tea, that would be perfectly okay. You take matches from a matchbox, that would be perfectly okay. Others extend this to roommates who live together in a dormitory, that it's understood that they're not mocked about each one taking from the other person's food supply, or cookies, or whatever happens, or drinks that are in the refrigerator. Again, I assume it all depends upon the situation. If you know otherwise, then the chazaka would not be applicable. Or friends who are stopping over at a friend's house when the parents aren't home, and they take a little bit out of the refrigerator. So these are all types of things that would fall into these categories of what we call the kach nahagu, or that there's an umdana demuchak, that the baal is not makbid. And presumably, you would also have situations when the mitas chasidus would not be applicable either. When, for example, it's clear that the item is meant to be taken. A common question that's asked is hotel guests who go to hotel rooms. So what are you allowed to take from the hotel? You're allowed to take the soap bars. So you're allowed to take the shampoos that they leave. So the question then would become, what is the expectation of the hotel? Somebody actually asked. Somebody was a manager in many hotels. He said, look, if you have a soap bar that you've already opened, they're not going to give that to another guest. They're not going to reuse it. So obviously, if you've already opened it, then you can use the soap bar. You've already opened it, you can use the shampoo. They don't expect you to take the towels. They don't expect you to take the sheets. They don't expect you to take the blankets. That would be going, you know, too far, obviously. But things that are clearly meant to be taken should be taken. On the other hand, if there's a soap bar or a shampoo that was there on your second day in the hotel and you were still using the soap bar or the shampoo from the first day and you never opened it up from the second day, so then it's not at all pashut that they're going to want you to take it, because presumably if you don't open it up, then they're going to use it for the next guest. So in such a situation, one would have to ask. There wouldn't be a chazakah. In order for there to be a chazakah, there would have to be a policy that was advertised by the hotel, or there would have to be a common custom that was followed in a particular community, like with respect to taking matches or with respect to taking hot water, like the Aruch HaShulchan mentions. But if there isn't a clearly established custom, then of course you would have to be mevara. Then you would have to err on the side of caution, and you couldn't assume that it would be mutter for something for somebody to take it. But again, this is all within the Rashba. This is all within the Ritva. But what about Tosfos? Do we possibly like Tosfos and us? That's a discussion in the Shach, actually in Siman Shin Nun Ches. So in Siman Shin Nun Ches, there's a discussion about our Oris, our sharecropper, like a sharecropper. So sharecropper, as we mentioned, there's a distinction between Konim Chalukah and Le'achar Chalukah, right? That Le'achar Chalukah, whatever the sharecropper has, so the sharecropper is entitled to. So if he gives it to you, you're allowed to keep it. If it's Konim Chalukah, so you have to be worried. He's taking on the owner's cheshbon, and he might not necessarily tell the owner and return it to the owner's cheshbon. So that's mentioned. So that's, this is discussed in Shulchan Aruch. Shulchan Aruch, Siman Shin Nun Ches, Mutar Likach Me'aris, Sherei Yesh Lo Chelek Bepeiros Ve'Eitzim. You're allowed to take from a sharecropper, because the sharecropper, this is just the mechaper speaking, mechaper says the sharecropper has a portion in the peiros, has a portion in the eitzim of the field, and so forth. So says the Ramah, v'yesham nedaka l'achar shechalku. So yesham, this is only after there's been a chalukah, the stamash shalohu moked, where it can be assumed that what he's giving you is his. About konam chalukah asa, but before the chalukah you have to be worried, the chashinan shalo yitain l'balabayis negin mashinatol. Now remember, that's how Tosfos learned the Gemara. Why did Tosfos learn the Gemara that way? Tosfos said, because, you know, certainly nobody would have a Havamina, said Tosfos, that a Meimer Ravashi would take on the basis of clearly, deliberately taking away from the owner's portion, based on the assumption that the owner wouldn't mind when the owner finds out about it, because that would be in contradiction to the Shita of Abaya, the Yush Lomidas Lo Avayush. So, look, take a look at the Shach, okay? The Shach over there says that, he quotes Tosfos, the pshat that Tosfos has in the Gemara, the Tosfos says that the Adam nosin le'echol ha'chaveh midor she'enu shelo, if it's known that if somebody is giving you a food that doesn't belong to him, el shechaveh, but only belongs to somebody else, even though the person taking it knows that the owner of the food is going to be perfectly okay with this when he finds out about it, asa lo'achlo da'alokha kabayi di'ishu l'midas lo v'yush, not allowed to eat it because the halakha is like a baiva. And even though when the owner finds out about it, he's going to be happy. Right now, he doesn't know about it, so he hasn't expressed his comfort level. So says the Shach, we love the mistapina. And if not for the fact that I was fearful, I would disagree, which means I'm disagreeing. So the Shach disagrees. And the Shach disagrees essentially with Tosfos, Hayisi Yoyma Shemutar. He says, this is not comparable to Yish Lomidas. Yish Lomidas is different because it's Bisura Baliya Asaliyade. As opposed to this case where he says it's Beheteva Asaliyade. Why is that? Because in the case of Yish, if the owner knew right now where the object was, then the owner would run and retrieve the object and would want the object. The owner does not want the object to be lost and to be taken away by the finder. And therefore, if the person who finds it takes the object before the owner has been miyayish, she's taking something that the owner really at that moment in time does not want the finder to have. As opposed to this case, where the owner would give permission at the time in which the individual is eating for the food just as much as he would give permission later. It's just that the owner doesn't know about it. But if the owner would know right now that a Maimon and Rav Ashi are about to eat his food, he would say, wonderful, please, by all means, I could not be happier that you are taking my food. And therefore, this is not akin to the case of Yishlo Midas, and therefore, this should be perfectly permissible. So that's the opinion of the Shach. So according to the Shach, we've expanded our dimension of a permitted takings a little bit further. Not only was it permitted in cases where it's common knowledge that the owner doesn't mind if people or a certain class of people would take the object, not only is it permitted where there is an established custom that everybody is comfortable with a certain type of object being taken, whether it's matches from a matchbox, whether it's tissues from a tissue box, or whether it is tea from a hot water urn, but even in cases where there is no established custom, there is no common knowledge, but this individual who's taking knows for sure that the owner would not object. But I know for sure that the secretary is not going to object if I take her nail file, so even in that case, it would be permissible. According to the Shach, according to Tosfos, no, it would not be permissible. How do we paskin? Big question mark. The Tzos, in a couple of places, both in Simen Shin and Fes, and also in Simen Reish Samach Beis, it's a long Tzos over there, the Tzos says, he never explicitly actually comes out against the Shach, the Tzos is quoted in many of the later Sfarim as disagreeing with the Shach, because the Tzos just says, the Shach says this, but it's kind of odd, because it goes directly against Tosfos, and Gos Ashri, and the Mordechai, so I can't really understand how in the world Tosfos disagree. The Tzos has his own Mahalach in which he says that it's very clear if you look at the Sugya distinguishes between a regular taking when there's no mitzvah involved and when there is a mitzvah involved. He says when there's nichusa de mitzvah, yes, nichusa de mitzvah, so then that overrides the impediment of yush. If there's nichusa de mitzvah, so that's such a strong assumption that it's almost like a yush mirosh. It's almost like the owner has made it clear from the outset that under these circumstances, he would be mafkir the item, he would make the item available for others to take in order to perform a mitzvah, because there's this idea of nichusa de mitzvah, and therefore nichusa de mitzvah is so strong that even if in actuality only finds out that the object was taken after the fact, it's as if he has given license before the fact. It's as if there has been some sort of a yush meirosh. As if you were, there was like a zuto shoyam that was carrying the object away. The zuto shoyam is called the yam shel Torah. It's called the yam shel mitzvah that is carrying the object away. So that would make it permissible for people to use for mitzvah purposes. But if there is no mitzvah purpose, so then says the Tzos, so then there would be no heter. So the Tzos essentially just formulates an approach which is inconsistent with the Shach's approach, and the Tzos quotes the Shach, and he notes that his approach is inconsistent with the Shach. So it's pretty clear that Tzos is not going along the lines of the Shach. The Nesivos, in a couple of places, approvingly quotes the Shach. So it would appear from the Nesivos HaMishpat that he is comfortable with the approach of the Shach and Simen Reish Mem Dalet, for example. The beginning of Simen Reish Mem Dalet, the Nesivos explains that the Shach himself is saying that if, with respect to this particular individual, there's an umdana demuchak or a giboy das, so is present, even though the individual who owns the object does not know that it's being taken at this point in time, that's good enough for a matana to be conveyed. He understands that this actually has the strength to enable an object to be conveyed, even if there is no explicit das machnes. So it's a little bit questionable. So which approach do you follow? You approach the follow the do you follow the approach of the Shach? You follow the approach of the Nesivos? So I saw in the Sefer by Rav Tzvi Spitz, he writes that it's appropriate to follow the approach of the Tosfos and the Tzos, because the Lemaisa, this is a Suffolk Gezela situation, and therefore, if there isn't a Tzara Gadol, so one should be Machmer. On the other hand, I saw an essay about this in a Sefer called Umka Dedina, which is the Sefer that's put out by Rabbi Fleischman's Kol in Yerushalayim, by Rav Wind, and who's one of the members of the Kol, and Rav Wind said it seems to him that the Minhag Olam is to rely upon the Shach. So it's a question, Ladina, and there might be room for a Pshara. So what my number, the post, can point out is that the Shulchan Aruch Harav, the Baal HaTanya, seems to have come up with a pshara. So you take a look in the Shulchan Aruch Harav, okay? Yes. I'm sorry?
Where was
the tzos? The tzos is in Siman Reish Samach Beis. The main tzos is in Siman Reish Samach Beis. The long tzos over there. He articulates his whole mahalak about this. We're going to get to that. That's a mitzvah object. The tzos says the mitzvah is no problem. It says nichus in the mitzvah, everything is good. In fact, the tzos, we're going to get a little bit ahead of ourselves. The tzos says this is the makor. This whole idea, this whole sugya, is the makor for our reliance upon this notion of michal inish nevev mitzvah v'mamone, that you can take objects without permission. Because the way in which Nichol Inish Levevet Mitzvah Mamone appears in the Gemara doesn't quite manifest itself directly in terms of taking objects without permission. That's an extension that the Rosh applies to that principle. But he says this really is the basis for that principle about taking objects without permission for mitzvah purposes. Okay, so this is the other sugya, which of course we mentioned is Shom Shlomidas Habi Gazlan. That's based on the Gemara Bavar Siddhaf Mem Gimel. It's a Pilo Kek Vashela Shlomidas Balim Nikra Gazlan. So there are really two different instances in which this inyan would become pertinent. One is when you're taking the object to utilize and to consume the object. If it's like, for example, a piece of food, or it's hot water that you're consuming, or it's a match that you're using to light a fire, and then the match is going to be gone, or it's a toothpick that you're using to clean your teeth, and then it's going to be gone. But then there's also the nail file case, where it was my intention to do what? To take the nail file, use it, but then return the nail file. So none of these posts came up until now. Not the Tosas, not the Shach, not the Rashba, not the Ritva. None of them were talking about She'ela cases. They were all talking about outright Lakicha cases. So comes along the Shulchan Aruch Harav and says, you know what, we can distinguish between the two. When is it that we have to be worried that you can't rely upon notions of Yishlo Midas and things like that? That's when it's akin to taking like a lost object, where you're taking it. If you're going to take it, you're going to actually diminish the object, you're going to consume the object. So then, that's when we have to be machmir. If you're just borrowing an object and you're going to return the object intact, and you know that the owner wouldn't mind, so then there's room to be mekel. So take a look in Source Yud Aleph in the Shulchan Aruch Harav Pilchos Mitzia Bikan and Siv Dalet. Says, even if you know that when the owner finds out about it, he's going to be happy and he will rejoice. Because he loves the person who took it so much. Nonetheless, you can't take it without the owner's permission, and that's Tosos. Therefore, you go to the orchard of your friend, you can't pick up the peiros on the ground. Even though he knows the Baal HaPardes would be perfectly happy for him to do so. And he'll be happy and ecstatic. I mean, he's just going to like dance, he'll just like dance a jig when he finds out that his good friend has taken the fruit. Since right now he doesn't know about it, so at this point in time it's gezela, and therefore it's gezela. Okay, that's what he says. On the other hand, when he's talking about, and then he goes on to say that, of course, if it is makom shenagu, it's the type of thing that nobody is makbid about, so then it will be perfectly permissible. Actually, I don't have the quote over here, but he goes even further. And he says that even if it's known that this particular person in the past, the owner has allowed this individual who now wants to take the fruit to come to his orchard in the past to take the fruit, so he's established a common practice, not with respect to the entire world, but with respect to this individual, that also would be considered to be sufficient if the established practice was established with respect to this individual. Now that's interesting because not everybody says that. You'll notice that everybody up until now seems to be talking about common practice in a community towards like, you know, that nobody is like the Yoruch HaShulchan talks about, nobody's machbid if you take some hot water, if you take a match, nobody's machbid about it. But we don't really find, and the Ritva did mention a little bit about, well, if you know that someone's not machbid about Talmidei Chachamim, but we didn't find the notion that if you know that someone's not makbid about you, because the person has allowed you to take it in the past, but the Baal HaTanya does go that far as well, and that could be of some significance, because it kind of like opens up things a little bit more. But anyway, when he's talking about She'ela, look at Sif Yud Beis, look at the bold part, okay, I just focus on the bold text. Elim Ken Yadu, he says, you're not allowed to borrow a person's object without their permission, you're not allowed to borrow a person's object without their permission, Elim Ken, unless Yadulo b'biror, unless the person who's borrowing the object knows with an absolute certainty, shelo yakpid alav ba'al ha'chepetz, that the ba'al ha'chepetz, the person who owns the object, is not going to be makpid. But then he adds a second category, Oshu do sheng derek bo b'nei adam makpid alav, klal, or it's something that nobody's makpid about, b'nei sheng shash hefseid v'kilkul, klal b'tach shemesh shizeh, because there's no hefseid v'kilkul. But he actually starts off saying that even without getting to the category that it's something which nobody is makbid about, even if the individual knows that lo yakbid Allah ba'al ha'chepetz, that in this particular case, the ba'al ha'chepetz is not going to get angry at him for borrowing the object, so then it would be permissible to borrow the object. And some of the contemporary poskim extend this to saying, if it's a type of object where you're going to return the object intact, and you know that the individual in question is not going to be makbid, even if it's depleted a little bit, but it's depleted to the point where it's essentially the same object, that also would come into this category of this balatanya. What would be an example of that? That you take like a pen, and you just, you know, have to sign a check or something with a pen when you're taking off like a tiny, tiny little bit of ink. Or it's a lighter that's used to light, you know, matches. So, you know, nowadays, instead of matchboxes, you have the lighters. So you are taking away a little bit of the fire from this lighter. It's only so much that the lighter can go. But nonetheless, since you're only taking a tiny, tiny little bit, and essentially you're returning it intact, so Rav Spitz thinks that that would be okay as well. But in any event, it seems very clear that we do have room to distinguish between a case of She'ela Shlomidas and the case of Lekicha outright, at least according to the Baal HaTanya, where he draws a pshara between the Shach and Tosfos, at least with respect to these two different cases. If it's Lekicha outright, to be machmir like Tosfos. If it's a She'ela Shlomidas, to be Meko like the Shach. And he also makes the observation that we made before in Sif Yud Gimel, it's Kuntras Acharot, that it's not clear at all that the Rashba, for example, in the Shita Mikubetzit, are arguing with Tosfos, except in terms of how to understand the sugya. But presumably, even Tosfos would agree that in a case of Kenah Nagu, that would be okay. And the Rashba is not necessarily accepting the opinion of the Shach when the Rashba says, in a case of Kenah Nagu, so you could be Mako. So we could say that, while at the same time saying that we'll be Machmir against Tosfos, that if it's not a Kenah Nagu case, and it's just in an individual case, somebody who's taking an object knows that the owner won't mind that he himself, that this individual is taking the object, and that's more akin to a Yir Shlomidah situation, so then it's still appropriate it would still be appropriate to be Machmir like Tosfos, unless one held like the Shach. But Kenah Nagu lives in a different category. So therefore, what do we have so far? We have the Kenah Nagu and Umdana Nemucha cases, right? Which, as you pointed out, as Yitama pointed out, really fall into two different categories. One is where it's established custom, that everybody follows a certain custom, they're comfortable with certain objects being taken. We said that's Mutam Yikri. Remember we said there is a Midas Chasidus not to do it. We did quote that. And unless it's a case where the established custom is that they want you to take it, because or that it's otherwise going to be thrown out, so therefore there's no value to the owner holding on to it. It's not as if we're worried, oh, it's just going to be, you know, there's a certain supply of toothpicks and the whole thing is going to, you know, be depleted. It's like a wooden fence and the wooden fence is going to be destroyed. You're a hotel guest and you have a little bit of shampoo taken over, so then that would be perfectly okay. That's established custom. And then there's the second category of what you call the Umdana Demucha category. It's common knowledge. It's common knowledge that this person doesn't mind. It's common knowledge that all from orchard owners want Tamidei Chachamim to be able to partake of the fruit of their orchard, okay? So in those cases, it would seem that we're make a halacha. Then we have then, as I pointed out, it could be that there's a third permissible category, the Baal HaTanya, is potentially creating, where there is a pattern of a practice that already exists with respect to these two individuals, where I know that this person has always allowed me to eat the fruit of his field before, where the Baal HaTanya seems to indicate that would also fall within the permissible category, okay? But the others don't talk about it. That's a little bit more of a chiddush. And then we have our disputed territory, which is between Tosfos and the Shach, where there is no established custom, and there is no umdana demucha. It's just that I'm pretty sure, okay? I'm sure, even though I don't have any precedential basis for this, but I'm sure that this individual who owns this object will not mind that I have taken this object when he finds out about it. But Tosu says that would be considered to be exalted, because it should be like Yehoshua Shlomidas, And the Shach says that that would be perfectly permissible. It's not like Yerushalmi Das, because even right now, if he would know that I'm taking it this section, if at this second, if the person had a video camera in which he'd be able to see me taking it this second, he would be perfectly happy about it. So the Shach says that that would be okay. And the Baal HaTanya draws a pshara, where he says that if it's the case of Shela Shlomi Das, so then you can be makel in that type of situation. And if it's a case of lekicha outright, where your mom is taking and consuming the object, so then you should be makel in that type of situation. Okay, so far so good. All right, fine. Now, it happens that there is another sugya. I will touch upon it, because I promised Rabbi Willem that we're going to be finished by 4:15 today. So I'm just going to, Rabbi Willem gets to go somewhere. So I'm just going to touch upon it briefly, but you should know about it, and that's the sugya in Hilchos Kiddushin, Siman Chav Ches, Sif Yud Zayin. It's based on a Gemara in Kiddushin, Adaf Nun Beis, Amin Beis, and it has to do, that also is a case of an aris of some sort of a person who was working on an individual's field, and he was harvesting dates in that field and making a date drink. It was like mead or something, some sort of a drink which is made out of dates. And the Gemara there says that if that sharecropper then uses that to be Mekadesh a woman, so it has a discussion, is that considered to be good or not? So it was a case where that happened, and the owner came along and said, why didn't you take from the higher quality dates? And the question is whether that is an indication, like in the Truma case of Klach Eitzel Yafos, that the owner was perfectly happy that he was Mekadesh in that fashion. The Gemara says, no, you can't rely upon it, because maybe it was Mishum Sifusa. It's a very similar Gemara to one that we have in Bava Metzia. Maybe it was just that he was embarrassed to say anything else, but once the Maisa had already been done, but he wasn't necessarily indicating that he was comfortable with it. So the Rambam takes that Gemara, and the Rambam codifies the following halakha, which is then repeated by the Mechaber in Shulchan Aruch. HaNichnas Deveis Chavero Lokaklo Kliyo Okel. The Rambam takes out the whole sharecropper part, just says it could be anybody. HaNichnas Deveis Chavero Lokaklo Kliyo Okel V'Kiyotzebem. Somebody walks into the house, this is what you're referring to, and they take an object from the house, and they use that object to be Mekadesh and Isha. Okay, it's not their object. I don't know what kind of a woman would want to be demeaned in such a way to, become a kodeshes in, this fashion. But presumably she's desperate. The kiddush boisha. Now he uses it to marry off of the to marry this woman with somebody else's food. Uvar ba'al abayis. And now the owner of the house comes in. Ava bisha amalo lama lo asatala darashu. Tell me mami mashin asatala. Even though the owner of the house says, oh, if I had known you would use my objects to marry, so I would have given you something much more valuable. I would have given you like my most valuable diamond ring. Ain't a mikudeshes. No, she is not mikudeshes. Shalom ala davazeh. Davazeh el kadesh lo yisbayishimo. He only said this so that the individual would not be embarrassed. Oh, bikidish mamon chaver shlomidas chaver harayse gezel. Ain't a mikudeshes. So that seems to be similar to what we're talking about. That even that you can't trust. Okay, the statement of the Bali afterwards, or maybe if you can trust it, it just doesn't work because of the yish lomidas consideration. However, what's the continuation, though, is a hearkening to our other category of where we have an umdana demuchak that the person is not makbid ba'aseh. He said, "Im kitchen b'davashim ba'al ba'is makbid alav." But if the kiddushin took place with something that the ba'al ba'is is not makbid about, kigon tomorrow egos reisim kudeshes misafek. So then she's mekudeshes misafek. So there's a whole big discussion about what does Rami mean mekudeshes misafek. Why is she only mekudeshes misafek in the event that I know that the ba'al ba'is is not makbid? Is it because that I have to be worried that even if this is something that would be good for kiddushin, and I know for sure that it is a shavaputa, for example, that it would be good for kiddushin, nonetheless, I have to be worried that it doesn't, that retroactive indication of the willingness of the owner for an object to be used is not good enough, and so too, I have to be worried that maybe the owner is going to be makbid about even a tomorrow egos, and therefore for kiddushin, I'm going to say that it's kiddushei safek. Is that what the Rambam is saying? In which case, maybe the Rambam is more of a nod, shall we say, for the shita of Tosos. That's how the Ma'arid understands the Rambam. Or do we say, like the Machane Ephraim and Simon Beis and Hilchos Gezeila, that no, the Rambam really is taking like the position of the Shach, and is saying that if I know that something that the Baal's not, that he's not makbid about, or if for sure I would be able to establish that when the Baal HaBayis said, why didn't you take something better, it wasn't for purposes of not being mevayish the person, but that we can tell that the Baal HaBayis really, really meant it, and if we could tell the Baal HaBayis really, really meant it, so in that case, the woman would be badei mekudeshes. And why does the Rambam say Arezu mekudeshes misafek? Because it's a suffek in the Tzemaro Ego's case, whether it was shavet futa or not. So that's what the Machane Ephraim says, that's what many others say as well. So it's kind of like a split between different achronim as to how you understand the Rambam, whether you understand the Rambam along the lines of the Shach, or whether you understand the Rambam along the lines of the Tosfos. And then the Ramah, for good measure, just adds that we have a separate category of Oreach, that at a certain point in time, when the Baal HaBayis gives something outright to an Oreach, not just somebody, you know, an Oreach who walks into a house and takes food without permission, and we have to figure out whether it's Gzela or not, but the Baal HaBayis Mamish extends an object to an Oreach, the Oreach Sheyoshev Be'ez of Baal HaBayis, and Otechel Kavakidish Bo, Harei Mekudeshes, and in such a case, the Oreach, that there is a certain point in time, says the Ramah, in which you can give an object of food to an Oreach, and if the Oreach uses that food to be Mekadesh and Isha, she would be Mekudeshes, and there's a whole sub-literature about what point in time does that occur. Is that only with respect to the food that goes into the mouth of the Oreach, in which case it would be kind of hard for him to be Mekadesh and Isha with the food that already went into his digestive tract, or is, you know, maybe then we would say, no, it's the food that was placed right in front of him, that like he would, if he could put it on his fork, he could take it off of his fork and be Mekadesh and Isha with it. Is it only if he did a Kinyan Agbal with it, which is what the Maharit says, he has to do a Kinyan Agbal with it? Is it anything which is placed right in front of the Oreach, even though he may not eventually get around to eating it? So there's a whole big discussion about at what point in time I say the food belongs to an Oreach, and this has nafkaminas not only for Hilkos Kiddushin, it has nafkaminas as well for Hilkos, what are you allowed to take home when you're invited as a guest to a wedding? So we'll get to that in a moment, okay? Which also plays into our topic, what do we say that a person has really given you for good, that you made a kinyan on another person because they placed it in front of you, then I'm makpid about it. So here, just, I guess what we'll leave this particular halakha just with the notion that this is left a little bit unresolved in terms of how to understand the Rambam. There are a couple of Noda B'Yehudas about this, and I already quoted the Noda B'Yehuda, which is in Madura Tinyana, Eben Ezer Simon Ayin Ches, I believe, which is quoted by the Pesachei Tshuva, in Simon Shin and Tes, which Noda B'Yehuda says, well, the Rambam holds that if a person's not makpid, so then there's no gezela, but it also doesn't belong to them either. And that's part of the problem in terms of using it for kiddushin purposes. It doesn't belong to them either. So that's one. What's one approach? But there, the Avnei Miluim quotes a different Noda B'Yehuda. There was an earlier Noda B'Yehuda in Madua Kama Eben Ezer Simon Nuntes, in which the Noda B'Yehuda said, this is all only true when we're dealing, if it works, with Taras Hefker. If it's something which the Baal HaBayis is not a makbid for anybody to take. Only then do we say that it would belong to the Oreach and it could create a Suffolk Kiddushin if we knew for sure that the Baal HaBayis was happy with the Oreach using this object or taking this object for Kiddushin, and it wasn't just Machmas Ksifus, he was just embarrassed and didn't want the guest to be embarrassed that he took this object, but we saw the Baal HaBayis really was happy that the guest took the object. So in such a case, then there would be real ownership, but it has to be something in which the Baal HaBayis wouldn't be makbid for anybody to take. And why is that? Because it has to work with Taras Hefker. And then the Avnei Miluim, after quoting this Noda B'Yehuda himself, is interesting because is the Avnei Miluim kind of going back on his general Mahalach, you know, that he articulated in the Ksos. I don't have a perfect answer for that. But the Avnei Miluim here says, Levivi Lokein Yidmeh, that I disagree with that particular approach of the Noda B'Yehuda, which the Noda B'Yehuda himself seems to have backtracked from anyway. He says, I disagree with that approach of the Noda B'Yehuda, because I think that even if the Baal HaBayis is just comfortable with the object going to certain specified individuals, or just to this particular Oreach and certain other people, that's good enough, even if he is makpid for this object not to be taken by a certain subgroup of individuals. In other words, even if he's not, even if the Baal HaBayis is not mafkir this object to the entire world, there will be certain people whom the Baal HaBayis would not want to take this object, nonetheless, that would be good enough for it not to be considered to be gezel. So it could be that this Avnei Miluim is not necessarily a contradiction to the shita that he holds in the Ksos. It could be that he's just saying that he's accepting this other category that we mentioned, which is that it's good enough even if we know that the owner, we know ahead of time, that the owner is not makpid for a particular individual or a certain set of individuals to take his food or to take the objects from his house. even if the owner, it's not the umdana, that the owner feels that way about everybody. But if we know that the owner feels that way about, like the Ritva says, that we know the owner feels this way about Tamei Dei Chachamim, so why couldn't I extend it beyond Tamei Dei Chachamim? Say, I know ahead of time that the owner feels this way even about two or three individuals based on his prior practice. So maybe this is better than the case of the Tosfos, where we're speaking specifically about a case where we know, based on prior practice, that the owner would have been comfortable for this individual to take an object, because the owner was always comfortable in the past that this person would take the object. So that's better than a case of Yiddish Lomidas, because we're basing ourselves upon prior practice. So it could be that maybe this is further support for saying that in a particular case, there's a distinction between the following two scenarios. I go into a person's house and I want to take fruit, but the owner's not around for me to ask them. So there are two different scenarios. One scenario is, I've never taken a fruit from this person before. I never asked them to take a fruit before, but I just know they're a good friend of mine and I want to take a fruit. So then we have a machlokas between the Tosfos and the Shach, whether that's okay. It's another scenario, which is, I have been in this person's house 20 times before, and I've always asked if it's okay to take a fruit, and they've always said that it's okay to take a fruit, and based on that past experience, I want to take a fruit, even though there is no established practice that this person is comfortable with anybody in the world taking a fruit. So it could be, based on this Avnei Miluim, based on what the Baal HaTanya said as well, also based on extension of the Ritva about Tamei Dei Chachamim, that maybe that would be better, that maybe there was more room to be makel in that particular case. Okay, so that's what I wanted to say about that. Now take a look in... Okay, I think we're going to make it. So you take a look in Shevet HaLevi, okay, Mavozna. So he talks about this guest case. I think it's important because while we're speaking about this subject, this is the type of thing that comes up a lot, okay? So we're not going to go so far as to discuss the scenario where a guest takes food from the table, from the chasana that he was at, and uses it to be mekadesh, say, another woman who happens to be a guest at the chasana. He was sitting next to her, he had a good time, he had a good conversation with her, and he says, you know what, let me take this piece of chocolate cake and I'll give it to you and will you marry me? That might work, that might taco work, okay? So actually, I'm not ruling out that possibility, but he's talking about something else, which is simply, are you allowed to take that piece of, you know, can you take the piece of chocolate cake altogether? Well, of course you can, if you're a guest at the wedding. What's the question? The question is, what if you want to take it home to your kids? You want to take it home to others? You want to pack it up afterwards? So he says like this, he says, Kol zeh kishiyoshim al ha-shulchan. And when it comes to guests, you also have to go after umdana. What's the umdana of when the owner is giving you, when the host is giving you the item? The host is giving you the item when you're sitting there at the table. L'kachas ha-baisam, l'okun u'prokim. But to take home the food and the flowers and so forth, pshitali, and the people talk about taking home the bencher. So, of course, everyone's entitled to one bencher. It doesn't mean you're entitled to 35 benchers. I mean, not that anyone wanted to take it, but let's say you did. Pshitali, de'ika srach yezel, mavad me manaso mamish. That there's a srach yezel if you're taking more than the portion that was actually on your plate. Sha'isakfam muchan molda achlo. If it went on your plate, so then you're right. That's yours. That's yours. You can use it, maybe even to be mekadesh nisha. You can use it, you can take it home. Umana asma me'achida. You had your portion and you left over a little bit of your portion. You didn't eat your cake. You didn't eat your dessert. So then that would be okay. But say you are dang shash. That wouldn't be a shash. Well, the kakas and alchom, shinosu shamal suda. But to take the additional food that's on the Viennese table, shloyu shayachim lo mamish, the Viennese dietary, ain't heter, but ain't heter. So he says he doesn't think that there'll be a heter, and he says it doesn't make enough, it's no nafkamina, even if the other members of his family were on the invitation and they just weren't able to make it to the chasana. It doesn't matter because the food is given solely for those who are present at the chasana, and there's no reason to extrapolate beyond that to assume that it would, that the host would be comfortable with one taking it from the chasana. Because you mechabi the host by eating there at the chasana, by attending the chasana, not sending somebody else to bring food home for you. That's not exactly how you mechabi the host of a chasana, right? Ibra, however, he says, is a footnote. Yesh mekomas, there are mekomas come on by America. There's this wild and crazy place called America. Shema shenishan reina suda, that was left over after the meal. People, opus, what a shlemos, giant pieces of chicken and portions, zorkim la'ash, but they throw them out of the garbage, if you could imagine such a thing, le'ibud. And the host is going to pay for it anyway, though it's all going to the garbage. So obviously it is a derisa to throw to the garbage, but you know, those crazy Americans, the Altashkis, that feel with Sherry Coast, it's an issue. Nonetheless, since this has become the crazy minhag, and the food's going to get thrown out anyway, should we mock with a lamb? So then it would be okay in those circumstances. One has to figure out if that's what you're talking about.
What about like in between case, or like, you know, it's like common things for people to ask to take a portion home or something. So it's like, it's not fully for people, and like the remainders would go back to Balabai.
So the maintenance would go back, then I think you probably have to ask, you know? Like my wife and I, sometimes we go to Kastanis and we want to bring home some cookies for the children. So we'll typically go to the host, we'll go to the Balia Simpla, and we'll say, is it okay if we take some cookies home for the children? Yeah. Sometimes they have cookies at the outside. You believe. It's meant to be taken off. That's for sure. Yeah, if it's meant to be, if it's an umdana demukha based on where they're situated, it's meant to be taken off. This is what usually happens. When we go on the outside, so people, so we will take 5 or 6 cookies.
Right.
Your own portion. Well, your own portion, she says, it's fine. It's your own portion. Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's hard to understand why people are, you're saying if they're going to leave early, for example. Right, so that way, so that's a question. The Seder Levi says it wasn't meant for you to just show up and leave or not show up altogether.
I've seen people do that.
So that's a little bit of a question. That's a little bit of a question, because anything that would show disrespect to the Bali Asimpa might not, there might not be a mechilo. There might not be an implicit permission to take under those circumstances.
Right, I'm saying the mere fact that the waiters have those takeaway trays for guests who are leaving shows that the Baal HaBayis is not
mocking. So then if you have those indications, you can presumably rely upon it. What happens with my wife and me, you know, we'll take, as we're leaving, in those, you know, little tables that we want to take for the kids. So we take like 6 or 7, you know, cookies, and then there's a long road back until we get to the house, and we tell where the house, so we have maybe 1 or 2 cookies left. So anyway, so kids are appreciative anyway. Okay, now it's interesting, so we mentioned that the Ksos uses this whole sugya as a paradigm for the whole idea of that it's mitzvah, it's mutter to take mitzvah objects, to perform a mitzvah with respect to a person's objects, because of nichus to the mitzvah, because he understands that's the whole distinction between the case of the truma, that's a nichus to the mitzvah, as the Gemara says explicitly, there in Bava Mitzia, right? It says, Mishum, the mitzvah, the Gemara pretty much spells out the whole concept of nichus of the mitzvah. So says, therefore, so that's the reason why all the poskim and simon yudalin of Avachayim are makel, it's based on a rush, the makel about, and the smak, and the mordechai, the makel about taking somebody else's talis, if you need the talis in order to perform the mitzvah, okay? Because it's based on this principle. The Shach, however, goes in the opposite direction. The Shach says, no, we see from the Gemara in Bava Mitzia that it is mutter to take an object whenever you know that whenever you know, the Shach doesn't say we see it from the Gemara, but he says that we can't drive otherwise from the Gemara. He says it's mutter to take an object whenever you know that the owner is not going to be makbid. He says based on that principle, the Shach has articulated sort of a general Shas principle, based on that principle that this does not come into the category of Yish Shalom Midas. So whenever you have reason to believe that a person is not going to be makbid, like even a person who's normally makbid, but you have to use it for a mitzvah purpose, so then, based on this general principle, you'll be allowed to use the object for the mitzvah purpose as well. In other words, the Shach starts in sort of a broader category, then he applies it to mitzvah situations. The Ksos confines the entire sugya to mitzvah situations. So according to Ksos, this is the Ikra sugya. According to the Shach, it's just an application of the sugya. Okay, so what type now? The one thing, though, that you have to remember when it comes to mitzvah objects is that if somebody is borrowing talis or tefillin or something like that, that there are a number of reservations to this rule. There are a number of limitations to this rule. Okay, so I'm going to mention 9 limitations to the rule very quickly. Okay, number 1, Mishnah Berurah says that it's only if it's a bikrai. It's based on the Bach. The Bach actually says in the side of Beis Yosef, on the side of the Torah, in Siman Yudalet, that it's only if it's bikrai that one is allowed, that there's an assumption that a person does not mind if you use their mitzvah object, as opposed to using it on a regular basis, because then there's a kshash that it could tear, that it could get ruined, that it could get dirty, that it can get ruined, that it can get messed up. So therefore, only on an ikrai basis, and that's supported even by the Gemara in Bar Mitzvah Daf Kof Testament Base, it indicates that there are limitations on how far we say Nichalinish Lemever Mitzvah B'Mamone. A Shoal of a Sefer Torah is not allowed to lend it out to another Shoal because we're afraid that the Sefer Torah is going to get ruined. So it's only Bikrai. Number 2, if you know the Aruch HaShulchan says, and I have a tshuva here from Ramosha as well, says the same thing. Tshuva by Ramosha, Zorachayim Chalakei Simen Chav. If you know that the person is Makbid, so then the whole all bets are off. Number 3, Eva Prima Gadim says that whenever you have a chazaka, whenever you can be mevara, whether the person is willing to give you the object for mitzvah purposes, you have to ask them first. You can't just rely upon the chazaka if it's easy to ask the person their permission. Like, for example, you need to borrow a talis and shul, like for an aliyah or something like that, like if somebody is single and you need to borrow a talis and they see that somebody's wearing a talis, they can't just run over to the person and grab the talis off their shoulder. They should ask the person, is it okay? You know, even if they don't want to talk during davening and just want to gesture to them, but there should be some sort of a gesture asking whether it is okay. I used to do this all the time when I was in Eretz Yisrael, when I was a bachur in yeshiva. So whenever I would daken, I would always borrow talesis. I would always ask ahead of time. And sometimes they were makbi. Sometimes they were makbi. Okay. And number four, the Nemuka Yosef mentions this. If you found this folded up talis, when you return it, you have to fold it up as well. And in fact, there's even a shaila, you might not have been mekayim the mitzvah if you don't return it quite in the same form in which you found it. Nice folded up form. Number six, if the Baal needs the object, and you see that the person who owns it is coming along and is about to put on his own tefillin, and you need tefillin, you start putting on his tefillin. So obviously, this principle is no good when chayecha komim, when the person who owns it needs it first. Number six, this is an old chayim kadmon, takanas hakadmonim, quoted by the Ramban, Choshen Mishpat, Simenkov, Sama Gimel. You're not allowed to remove the object from the place where it is. Like if it's in a shul, you're not allowed to remove it from the shul. You have to use it in the place where it actually is. If you see also that if it's in a makam mutzna, the Aruch HaShulchan says, so then the chazaka does not automatically apply. Like, you know, if you have to break into somebody's locker to take the object, so then the chazaka does not apply. And the Aruch HaShulchan also mentions another very important principle of Zman HaZeh, which is Zeya. If it's a type of object where it could get ruined through sweat, and the person is going to wear it is going to get sweaty and everything, so then it's also not object. A lot of poskim say Bizman HaZeh, it's not object, it's not obvious that this would apply to tefillin Bizman HaZeh, because some people are makpid about that this tefillin might get stretched out, particularly if the person who wears the tefillin decides that they're going to change the knot to fit their head, they may not be so, even if they try to put it back afterwards, they might not be so expert at returning the knot to where it was beforehand. So then the chazakah is going to apply. So there are lots and lots of limitations upon this chazakah, and therefore it's the sort of thing which obviously, you know, should be avoided whenever possible. But one important, if you hold like the shach, so what's the big chiddush of the fact that we're maker when it comes to cases of mitzvahs? The big chiddush would be what we mentioned in the based on the Yerushalmi, that when it comes to other non-mitzvah situations, there's a midas chasidus not to take it. But when it comes to mitzvah situations, there's no midas chasidus not to take it. If the chazaka applies and that the object is needed in order to perform a mitzvah, then there wouldn't be a midas chasidus. Now, one thing that the Ramah says in Siman Yudalid is... Good, 5 minutes. One thing that the Ramah says in Siman Yudalid is that this permission to take mitzvah objects like a talis does not apply to Sfarim. Not apply to Sfarim. You're not allowed to take Sfarim. Because when it comes to Sfarim, we're afraid that the Sfarim, Shema, Yikari, Oso, Belimudo. We're worried that you're going to tear the Sfarim. And that's based on the Sugya and Bamatzia Chavtesim of Ace. We're worried the Sfarim are going to tear. So Prima Gunim says, but nowadays people take Sidurim and Machzorim without permission all the time. And I have no idea what they're basing themselves upon. So the Knesset Agdala quotes in the name of the Radvaz that nowadays there's more of an implied mechilo when it comes to Sfarim. Why is there more of an implied mechilo when it comes to Sfarim nowadays? The Aruch HaShulchan also mentions this in Chosh Mishpat Simen Ayin Beis. So he says, "Kenatash Sfarim nitpasim mitzuyim." The Aruch HaShulchan says, because nowadays Sfarim are much more easier to obtain, and therefore there's much less of akpadus. And the Olish Yachalito Lilmo Bo Shakala. Therefore, you're allowed to use the sefer to learn with it a little shakal. Remember, we're not taking Sfarim. This is only in the borrowing category, which is more lenient anyway. Shalom Midaito.
There's already no time for
advice. Well, yeah. Below gar mitalos utfilin. And this is no worse than talis and tefillin. And in fact, the Ramah indicates as much in, you know, when the Ramah speaks about how you're not allowed to remove Sfarim from the place, from the base Knesset, it's mashma that you're allowed to use the Sfarim to begin with. So the Vilna Gaon over there says, because there's a difference between taking a sefer from a person's bookshelf in their home and taking a sefer that the person has brought to the Beis Knesset. They brought to the Beis Knesset, they brought it to a public area, so they're indicating that they're more comfortable with the notion that people could potentially use it temporarily. So the Vilna Gaon indicates, and obviously in very few words. So in the Horos Nassim, Rav Nassim Gishtetner, he points out, he develops this idea, you know, a little bit further. He says that it's not only that, he says that Achem Bizman HaZeh, Dika Sfarim Tuba, Va'akshe Darish, Sfarim Mitzuyim Yad Kol Echad. He takes the idea of the Aruch HaShulchan, and he says that it's also the idea that Mamish, everybody has all of the Sfarim. Mikol Shekein Sifei Meforshim, Seflas, and Nomodus, Vishivos, the Vadai Shehem Mitzuyim. So this certainly would come into the category of that which we would be comfortable with people using. And the idea also that Sfarim are a little bit cheaper nowadays than they were, you know, back way then. I mean, back nowadays, I'm not sure they've gotten a little bit more expensive again, but they're certainly cheaper than in the days where you had to, you know, really expend a tremendous fortune in order to have any sefer altogether. However, he says, Mikol Malkum, this is very interesting, he says, Ladina, Ulamaisit Sarakiyun, Imiesh Lismach Asvarazu. I'm not so sure whether we should all rely upon this. The Yesh Lom, the Bachu Yeshiva Shaylem, Mom Mishlehem. Nowadays, you have the boys who are learning in Yeshiva, they don't have their own money. Machbidim Gama Milsu Zutra. So maybe they are machmir about every single little thing. Maybe the money for them is a very, very big deal and a very, very substantial part of their budget. Therefore, his proposal is, Shiroshi Yeshiva Yodir Piska Durabim. The Rosh Yeshiva, the Manali Yeshiva, should say what? She calls Sefer Muknas the Beis Medrash, Reino Rosh Shavallah, Shavallah Magmin, Shalom Obedem. If there are any Sefer in the Beis Medrash and there is no specific annotation on the Sefer that the Baal and Mamakmin for people did not use it, Vashayim called Tamid Mishtamish for him, they make a Hachroza. So everybody understands that unless they make a statement against a Hachroza, that their Sefer can be utilized for temporary borrowing. But Daita the Hakim is Kabbalah Tamidim the Yeshiva. And it's on this basis that Tamidim are accepted into the yeshiva. Okay? And similar to the idea of a Sar Tanam Hitna Yoshua. Similar, you know, type of expanded notion. Now, what's the other manifestation of this then? So that, I'll just end with this. That is, of course, the halacha, the famous halacha, which everybody knows from the Aruch HaShulchan. In Siman Kuf Lamed Vav. Kuf Lamed Vav is not Hilchos Kazeda. Kuf Lamed Vav is not even Hilchos Aveda. It's Hilchos Umud. It has to do with like you bring objects to a craftsman, okay? Because that's the sugi in Baba Basa Daf Mem Gimel, Daf Mem Bav. It deals with bringing objects to a craftsperson, and then like even a launderer. It could be like you bring it to the dry cleaning, and then you get back somebody else's suit. And the question is, so that means that somebody else has your suit, so can you assume that, you know, this person, since they got something else, they're going to use what they have, so you can use what you have. So he says that, well, we draw a distinction between if it was an object left in Beis HaAvel or Beis HaMishneh. It's a public place where objects are not being sold by the individuals who leave it there, so then you're not allowed to use the object. If it's a Beis HaUmad, so there's more room to be made after a certain amount of time has elapsed, then maybe there was some side deal that was made between the Uman and the person whose object you eventually ended up with. So says the Aruch HaShulchan. So he says that that even though the Ikar Adin is that when it comes to Dvarim that are left in a Besa, Ovel Besa Kmishteh, that if you end up with the wrong object, that you're not allowed to use it because you don't know that there was any special deal and the person hasn't given you permission, and therefore there's no assumption even that, you know, the person whose object you have would have let you use it. And if there's Yush afterwards, so that's Yush afterwards to be Surah Asa Liyadeh, so therefore you're kind of stuck. So he says, nonetheless, there's a minute. And we rely on the minute. A minute calls Agadolim, Makam Agadolim, Makam Shiram, Misasim Sham. If there are places where lots of people congregate, and Menicha Minolim, Ayonim, Push, they leave their rubbers. They leave their rubbers in the entranceway, in the coat room. Ritzesim, Yischafel, Shozeb, Zeb. People switch and mix up their rubbers. Emak Vidim, Adarim, Shtarish, Kalecha, Bishokaber, Shisol, Panim, Makhliv, Misasim, Vemizak, Shash, Kazela, Shkay, Nogu. Okay? There's no Shash, Kazela, because this is the minute. All right? So the question is, how far do we extend the Aruch HaShulchan? So the Igros Moshe in Aruch Chaim Chelkei Simintes says, we can't always assume in every single place, in every single makom, that that they've all adopted this minhag of the Aruch HaShulchan. And therefore, you know, he says that, in fact, once you adopt the Aruch HaShulchan, it should apply not only to rubbers, but you'll apply it to little umbrellas, you'll apply it even to jackets. He talks about jackets, could be applicable to jackets as well. But he says that there's a big shaila, how far we can apply this principle of Shekei Nagu. So therefore he has the same idea that was articulated by Rav Gishtetner. He says, Tov lahanim zeh, b'chol makom u'makom ayidei rosh ha'kahal, that the leaders of every community, every shul should say, v'yifasimu zeh l'chol mispalem etchilas ha'takana, say to all the people who come and dive in the shul, v'yakasu v'yapinkas takana zu, that the takana should be, that they should say explicitly, we are following this minhag in our shul. When it comes to the rubbers, when it comes to the jackets, when it comes to the umbrellas, we are going to follow this minhag so that everybody is put on notice. The gam kasuv ba'izim iya debuk makom shabikim koyanim nizdarim basic knesses. You put it up on the bulletin board. So as yeshlitlo sheyeduk farkor zekon krasim basic knesses af orachag bekray. And then you can assume that everybody knows about it, even if there's somebody who's just a temporary visitor, that everybody would know about this takana. So the best thing is to ensure that there be an explicitly articulated public takana when it comes to any of these inyanim, where we want to rely upon a shekei nagu, whether it's the utilization of sfarim in the base medrash, whether it's relying upon the fact that the original owner of the rubbers that you ended up with would be okay with your taking the rubbers, because everybody ended up with some sort of set of rubbers in the end, or some sort of umbrella in the end. So all of these things should be publicly broadcast, that there not be any questions about it. And in a situation where somebody would find themselves in dire straits, like I did, with the lack of the nail file, or of a ruler. So as we see, it can be very, very complicated. And it should also be noted that Shlosh Lomidas is responsible for onsim that occur, not only onsim that occur, but even Mesa Machmas Malacha onsim, so that, you know, in my case, even when we say there is permission given, like in a mitzvah context, the Baal Nesivus says in the Mekor Chaim that there's still full liability, because the dispensation is only if there isn't damage that's caused, but otherwise, even Mesa Machmas Malacha, normal wear and tear, there's liability for it all. So one has to recognize that there is an assumption of responsibility in these cases, and you should be as equipped as possible, so you don't need to be in the challenging circumstances where you would have to rely upon other people's objects in any event. And it's always good for certainly all those who are present to observe the Midas Chasidus of the Yerushalmi, so that we not get too comfortable with anything even bordering remotely upon Gezeilah.
When's the next Chabura?
I'm saying next Thursday. Okay.